Hello and welcome to The Download. I'm your host, Dave Richardson, and it is time to check in. Kind of monthly we do this with Canada's hardest working economist, Eric Lasalle, chief economist of RBC Global Asset Management. Actually, I should use your title more often because it's very impressive.
I noticed recently they just tweaked how the titling works, and technically now it's managing director and chief economist, which I do not like. I do not like that. I feel like it actually, to some extent, dilutes the clout of being a chief economist. So let's stick with that. But I've seen it complicate some of the papers I write and presentations I give. FYI.
I think people generally internally and people who listen to this podcast know that I'm a little less formal than most. So I will go with chief economist. We generally don't even acknowledge that you are the chief economist. I thought I would do that just for the one time, and then I still get it wrong.
You can just call me CE if you like. That might work too.
Oh, CE, I like that.
CE. Just missing an O, Dave. I'm just missing an O, and I'm all the way there. That's the CEO joke.
You're kind of fighting my narrative that you're the hardest working economist in Canada, because it seems like you know, writing managing director is just a little bit of an extra effort that you don't want to make.
I'm just all about productivity, unlike the rest of Canada, apparently.
Oh, geez. Well, is that where you want to start with Canada
catching strays here?
Canadian productivity?
It remains poor, that's for sure. I'd like to think it starts to inch a little higher over the second half of the year. There is some indigestion from that really fast immigration and maybe a bit of a post-pandemic hangover, but it's been pretty rough, and I'm not sure there's an easy path to rapid increases, unless we all just switch our titles to acronyms, and maybe that'll save us a bit of time.
There we go. So we're going to focus today, though, and why we pick this date every month to reconnect is you get the jobs report out in the U.S. and Eric, I think from, you know, we've been doing this through this year anyways, an expectation that we were going to start to see some softening of some of the numbers. We were going to start to see the data move towards, you know, inflation continuing to come down. And to some extent it has, but it just seems more stubborn. Each number every month that gets reported just seems to be a little touch on the strong side relative to the weak side. But the number this morning was one that was a little softer than expected. And we've also seen some softening in some other areas. So what was the number this morning, and what do you interpret out of it? Because markets certainly had a strong reaction off this morning's number.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And so, to start with, as you say, the economy, for the most part, over the last year plus, has defied gravity, has exceeded expectations. And so we've been more pleasantly surprised than not, or maybe even pleasantly is not the word, because we've gotten too much growth and it's, you know, keeping inflation up. And so bottom line, though, is we've had more strength than weakness on the economic side. It does seem as though we're getting a little bit of, I don't think softness is the right word, but a bit of a deceleration in some of the recent U.S. economic data, and so I'm sort of teasing by not saying the numbers yet, but a bit of a deceleration in a way that actually the market's embracing. And so, you know, bond yields are falling because, of course, it makes it a little easier to cut rates and makes it a little easier for inflation to come down. And the stock market's rallying as well, which, you know, isn't necessarily a foregone conclusion when you get a weaker economic figure. But we are in this realm in which, you know, bad data is bad, strong data is bad too, because it's too strong and it's the thing that's keeping inflation up. And so what we're looking for is mediocre economic data, and this was actually mediocre economic data. So, you know, U.S. job creation for April was 175,000 jobs. That was less than the 240,000 consensus. It was the weakest in 6 months. It is still a perfectly fine number, by the way. Like that, yes, that would be a number that we would, you know, be envious of for large swaths of the last decade or so. There's a bit of a nuance in the sense that, you know, U.S. population growth, and this is something we've been really working on lately, and we're going to write more about shortly. But, you know, U.S. population growth is actually really fast right now. So you do need pretty fast job growth to keep pace with that. And arguably, this was maybe even a little bit less than you would need on a steady state basis if you wanted to keep a perfectly fixed unemployment rate. And so the unemployment rate went up from 3.8 to 3.9. But I think maybe the broader picture is one in which it's still a fine rate of hiring. The unemployment rate was 3.9% a couple months ago as well. So it kind of went down and it's back up to where it was. Realistically, it has to go to, you know, 4 to 4.5 just to get to a sustainable steady state position would be our guess. And so, you know, this is consistent with a gradual march in that direction. And you look at the details, and not that you can necessarily make grand conclusions based on the sectors, but it was deceleration was across the board, but we're still seeing job creation across most of the economically sensitive sectors. And so, you know, construction was up, Manufacturing was up, retail was up, transportation to the extent it's sort of the lifeblood of moving things around, it was up, leisure and hospitality was up, education and health, which is less economically linked, was up a lot. So it wasn't that all the job creation was in economically sensitive sectors, but you weren't seeing big chunks of the economy losing jobs. There were just a handful losing a couple thousand jobs here and there. So I would say this was a fine report and maybe actually more consistent with sustainable economic growth. And it's consistent with what we're seeing and what we have been seeing, I guess, elsewhere, you could say, in the U.S. labor market. And so job openings were really, really high and they're coming down and they're still totally fine, pretty robust even, but they're down. And the quits rate has been trending down for a while. People are less likely to just quit their job because the prospect of getting a better one or even just another one isn't quite as good as it was, but it's still mostly a progression toward normal. So I think we walk away saying, yeah, it was a miss, but it's still consistent with economic growth. And maybe it's even part of a broader story here, Dave. And so I said, this one undershot expectations and it's more modest to moderate economic growth. We have had a few other things consistent with that as well. And so we did get Q1 GDP for the U.S. out and it did come in sub 2%. You might recall we had 5% and 3 to 4% kind of numbers annualized for the second half of last year. So there's a slowdown. I don't think it slowed quite as profoundly as it looks. It's one of these ones in which some inventory funny business in there and import surge, which subtracts from GDP, even though it means that people were happy to spend. And so it hurts your brain a little bit. And so I would say maybe the proper interpretation there wasn't quite as weak, but it was a deceleration. And we've actually also just gotten a couple of days ago, and one was literally 18 minutes ago as we're recording this, so hopefully I don't miss anything, but the ISM manufacturing and the ISM services indices, which are some of the bigger leading indicators out there for the US, and they both did show a bit of weakness. In fact, both did slip below 50, which is that delineation point between growth and decline. The manufacturing one's not all that exciting. I mean, it was notably below 50 for a long time, and it just snuck its head above for a moment for a month, and it's been a bit sawtoothed in terms of going up and down for a while, so I wouldn't read too much into that. But the ISM services just slipped below 50, and that's the first time we've seen that since December 2022. And again, these things are choppy, and I wouldn't doubt that it could be higher than 50 again next month. But there is a deceleration in the U.S. economy going on. And for the most part, the market is embracing it and viewing this as the necessary shift to a soft landing. And hey, maybe the Fed can cut now because maybe inflation gets to cool off a little bit. And I think that's probably the more likely interpretation of the two. But I will say, you have to acknowledge that in the early going, a soft landing is indistinguishable from a hard landing. Both involve a deceleration.
That's right.
The soft landing, you decelerate to a limited extent and then stabilize. And the hard landing, you just keep going downward. And so, if you want to be a bit nervous, you can say that we can't completely rule out this other, hard landing scenario playing out right now. And, I think we've...
But the bottom line and what we've talked about, Eric, is that you ultimately needed a softening in the economy. So whether it was just a soft landing, so the economy slows but never goes negative, or you have a recession, you have something that kind of taps the brakes on things, takes that extra inflation out, and resets things for the next economic cycle. Although before we move on and you respond to that, I don't recall from doing my economics degree or MBA that we talked about inventory funny business. Can you define that as an economic term? Is that what my daughters are up to once I gave them a credit card?
Hopefully not. Or maybe they are building up an inventory stock in some amazing store that'll impress you, Dave.
Quite impressive wardrobes they've got.
We've got quite an inventory of ramen noodles in our basement. I've got some enthusiastic children, but nice, so we don't normally use the word inventory in a household context. But nevertheless, to your question, actually, it's not that funny business. I was just being lazy. So inventory accumulation declined, and so that was a drag on GDP. Yes. So what really what I mean by that is it tends to just kind of offset the prior month, and it bounces back and forth. And in fact, we're not seeing particular evidence that businesses are trying to draw their inventories down in a big way. And so the statement there really is just that, realistically, next quarter it'll probably be with the opposite sign, and we'll be adding artificially a little bit to the economy. And so and ultimately, I guess as well, when the inventory side comes down, keep in mind that GDP is primarily measuring output. And so when inventory comes down, that does mean that people produced a bit less, but it means that people kept consuming the same amount. In fact, if you look at a domestic demand kind of measure, they were buying all the things that were made by businesses, and then more because they were also eating through the inventory that was already sitting there. So, you know, from a demand side, the economy was moving a bit faster. So I tend to discount that.
Okay. So the big question then out of all of this, well, maybe it's not the big question, but it's what a lot of people think about, is then what does this mean for the Fed, all of this? So we had the Fed out earlier this week, held rates steady, and kind of indicated that, maybe as strongly as they would ever position things, which is always kind of never definitive in any way, but sort of pushing the envelope in terms of the language they use, that the next move in rates is going to be down versus up. So they kind of took rate hikes off the table, although weren't very specific about when those rate cuts would happen. They might get pushed out farther and farther. And so what is today, and all the things we've been talking about to this point, what does that do with the Fed, who I'm sure had a preview of this as they were making that decision?
Right. Well, I mean, so certainly you're right. I mean, the most recent Fed statement or decision, press conference is really the big part of the show these days. Yeah. So inflation not cooperating. So, they are not feeling great about it, but people knew that was coming. I mean, the market had already wildly swung kind of away from rate cuts, understanding that inflation hasn't been fully cooperating recently. But as you say, it's not that they ruled it out, but certainly they're not actively thinking of a rate hike. So they said the unlikely that the next policy rate move will be a hike. So that was never something fully priced into markets, but it just reduces the chance of that happening in the near term. And so that was welcome. And the bond market rallied on that and priced in a bit more cutting. Another interesting one, by the way, is that the state, I guess the press conference revealed that they are not thinking about the election in the context of rate decisions. So there's always this debate, the election comes up and, maybe you don't want to be cutting or hiking right around the election. It just interferes with it, gets politicians grumpy, all sorts of maybe undesirable elements, particularly at a time when central banks are just under heavy political scrutiny. But Powell was pretty clear here, they're not thinking about the election in the context of rate decisions. And so, I think basically the combination of some weaker economic data, I didn't mention this, but the fact that wage growth decelerated a little bit more in the payroll data, which is, again, welcome for controlling inflation as much as the average worker maybe doesn't love it. We've seen, as a result, the market feel emboldened with this comment about the timing and with regard to the election. And so, prior to the last few days, we had, rate cut priced in for this year, but it was priced in for November. That was as soon as you got to a full 25 basis point rate cut. And, where we are right now is the market's now pricing in just about a full rate cut for September. So there's a September 18th meeting. So it doesn't look like June, July is necessarily on. You just need a bit more evidence that inflation's coming around before you could pull the trigger. But the market thinks September is not just fair game, but a pretty likely point for a cut. And so that seems fair. And the market has now not quite fully, but almost got a second cut in for 2024. So, I mean, you'll recall we started the year, there were like six cuts priced for the year. Maximum pessimism on that was maybe a week ago when we had, one cut priced for November, December even. And now we're back to two. And so a little bit of a pivot there. And of course, on the bond market side, we had, and gee, I'm going to type things into Bloomberg here. So this is no doubt riveting listening for your viewers or listeners. But, we had a U.S. 10-year yield that peaked in the realm of 470. And, it's sitting at 454 right now. So there's been a bit of a rally here. Still higher than it was at the end of the year, clearly. But, equally, and we can't say this was a peak with any kind of definitive certainty. But, if this is a peak, it peaked lower than it did last October, as an example.
Now we should be fair in pointing out that whereas markets are generally pretty good at predicting things and looking forward and seeing what's coming, they have been particularly poor at predicting this rate cycle and particularly poor in terms of their anticipation of what the Fed is going to do around the Fed funds rate. So we want to proceed with a little bit of caution. As you say, here's one data point that kind of makes you more optimistic that rates can be cut earlier this year, and that there will be rate cuts this year, but still lots of reports to come before we get to probably where they actually pull the trigger on cutting rates, and the markets are just kind of egging them on and hoping that they do cut.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And so I feel the same way. I mean, the market hasn't done a great job, and yet market predictions of central banks are one of the more efficient markets out there. Like you look at the number of intelligent professionals who are tracking and trying to predict this, and there are, you know, far more people trying to get the Fed call right than even trying to get the price of Microsoft right. And so, as much as it's been woefully imperfect, it's also not clear that you can easily beat what the market is thinking. And so maybe the thing to recognize is there is just a lot of uncertainty around that. And, at this point, the market thinks two cuts or so is the most likely for right now. Could it be four? It could be if the economy really swooned. That would probably be a hard landing scenario, truthfully, but it could be. Could it be unchanged? It's not off the table. Could there be a hike? Pretty unlikely based on what they're saying. You'd really need some things to go, I guess, on the inflation side to go really pear-shaped to get to that point. I think that's quite unlikely. Yeah. But, the realm of possibilities embraces, four cuts all the way to one hike or something, you could say, this year. And, right now it looks like two is maybe the most likely. Two cuts.
Yeah, and in that sense, the market has been, pretty accurate. If you look at the stock market anyways, in looking and saying, hey, we likely don't have a recession, so we have a soft landing, so earnings bottom out later this year, and the next move in rates is down, and that's why the market has, generally rallied since late October of last year. We had a recent last couple of weeks little softening, little bit of a pullback, which was, was long overdue. But they're racing again this morning with these numbers, and again, generally the market is looking for, ultimately what would be better conditions for companies operating a year from now than where we are today, and in that sense, again, looks like it's been pretty accurate.
That's right. And, keep in mind, what we really, really want to have happen here is get inflation under control. That sets us up for lower rates. And those two things set you up for a nice runway of growth. And so that's kind of mission one. And unless your investment time horizon is the next 3 months or something like that, which hopefully it's not, it's usually a multi-year or even a multi-decade type of time horizon. Those are the most important things to accomplish. And if the economy needs to be a bit weaker, that's fine. It's certainly preferable to avoid a recession if you can. And we've talked about this at length before. I guess all else equal is the economic data weakens here, maybe that risk is inched a tad or two higher, but it's still, we think, the less likely of the two scenarios. It still seems more likely to us that we get growth, but keep in mind, we use the word landing for a reason, which is just that it does involve some deceleration. It's, or maybe the way I should put it is, there's been talk of a no landing, and the no landing would be the economy just keeps screaming forward, and, I view that as being actually not a real option, to the extent that screaming forward means inflation is not going to come anywhere near where we need it to be, and you're just going to need to go higher on rates and hurt the economy later, and it's just a later, softer, hard landing, as far as I'm concerned, the no landing scenario. But that no landing scenario is now looking less likely to the extent we are getting a deceleration, and so I think for now we can be constructive about this and say this is what we need to have happen in the economy, and we can hope and I think expect that inflation cools a little bit over the next quarter or so. That I don't think this is the forum for detailed discussions on insurance inflation, but we've been spending some time on that recently, Dave. Read the next macro memo if you want all the nitty gritty details on that. But this is still coming together in a pretty constructive way. And I should say as well, if you're on your way to a recession, which I think is below a 50% chance, it's not usually a smooth trip downward. It's usually a pretty abrupt one. And so I would say, hiring going from missing 240 and hitting 175, maybe other than one blurry month, usually you're finding yourself pretty fast on a downward path if it was to be a recession scenario. So not seeing that at this point.
Well, I can tell you, I just added my daughter to our driving insurance policy. And I can give you another data point if you need that for your research. Although on a personal inflation front, Eric, you'll be happy that the listeners will be, I know they track my personal inflation as they listen. I just spent 3 weeks traveling, fantastic food opportunities in front of me every day. And I came back home with 0 pounds gained. So I'm very, so we can get this inflation under control if we really focus. And I think the Fed and Bank of Canada have their focus right.
Well, I think realistically, the high price of food made you want to buy less of it. And that might have been the secret. So this is inflation on the price side preventing inflation on the waistline. So,
yes, if you're calling me cheap and price sensitive, you are accurate again, Canada's hardest working economist. Eric, great to catch up with you again. Thanks for your time as always, and we'll see you next month. Let's see what the next month brings.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
This recording has been provided by RBC Global Asset Management Inc. for informational purposes only and is not intended to be investment or financial advice. You should consult your own legal, accounting, tax, investment, or financial planning advisors before engaging in any transactions.